Thank you, Sina, for playing the mridanga and for that wonderful singing of Dhammadharasthakam. Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Divinity and Divine Nature, Text 5. Munayakshatu Prishtoham. Bhavad Bir Lokamangalam. Yat Krita Krishna Samprashno. Yenatma Supersedati. Munaya Sadhu Prishtoham. Bhavad Bir Lokamangalam. Yat Krita Krishna Samprashno. Yenatma Supersedati. Munayaksadhu Pristoham. Bhavad Bir Lokamangalam. Yat Krita Krishna Samprashno. Yenatma Supersedati. Sages. Sadhu.
Sadhu.
This is relevant. Krishna. Question. Aham. Myself. Bhavadbi. By all of you. Loka. The world. Mangalam. Welfare. Yat. Because. Krita. Made. Krishna. The personality of Godhead. Samprashna. Relevant question. Yena. By which? Atma. Self. Supersedati. Completely pleased. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. O sages, I have been justly questioned by you. Your questions are worthy because they relate to Krishna and so are of relevance to the world's welfare. Only questions of this sort are capable of completely satisfying the self. Or, since it's been stated hereunto before that in the Bhagavatam the absolute truth is to be known, the questions of the sages of Namisharanya are proper and just because they pertain to Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth. In Bhagavad Gita 15:15, the Personality of Godhead says that in all the Vedas there is nothing but the urge for searching after Him, Lord Krishna. Thus the questions that pertain to Krishna are the sum and substance of all the Vedic inquiries. The whole world is full of questions and answers. The birds, beasts, and men are all busy in the matter of perpetual questions and answers. In the morning, the birds in the nest become busy with questions and answers. And at evening, also the same birds come back again and become busy with questions and answers. The human being, unless he is fast asleep at night, is busy with questions and answers. The businessmen in the market are busy with questions and answers, and so also are the lawyers in the court and the students in the schools and colleges. The legislatures and the parliament are also busy with questions and answers, and the politicians and the press representatives are all busy with questions and answers. Although they go on making such questions and answers for their whole lives, they are not at all satisfied. Satisfaction of the soul can only be obtained by questions and answers on the subject of Krishna. Krishna is our most intimate master, friend, father, or son, and the object of conjugal love. Forgetting Krishna, we have created so many objects of questions and answers, but none of them are able to give us complete satisfaction. All things but Krishna give temporary satisfaction only, so if we are to have complete satisfaction, we must take to the questions and answers about Krishna. We cannot live for a moment without being questioned or without giving answers. Because the Srimad Bhagavatam deals with questions and answers that are related to Krishna, we can derive the highest satisfaction only by reading and hearing this transcendental literature. One should learn the Srimad Bhagavatam and make an all-around solution to all problems pertaining to social, political, or religious matters. Srimad Bhagavatam and Krishna are the sum total of all things. Om Gyana Pranandisha Gananjana Salakaya Chaksa Unmitamina Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Panchakopa Tribhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyebhyascha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So, we are in this very important section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. In chapter 2, the first few verses gave us an introduction where Suta Goswami gave prayers to the predecessor spiritual master, Shukadeva Goswami, Vyas, etc. Now, in this verse, he is complimenting the sages on their questions. This is sort of a transition verse then to the next several verses, beginning with verse 6, really 6 through 22, is where Suta Goswami answers many of the questions, and this is one of the most important sections of the Srimad Bhagavatam. I don't think I'd be alone in suggesting that. Our acharyas and Srila Prabhupada, etc., have mentioned these are very, very important verses, and they'll start becoming very familiar beginning tomorrow. You know, there'll be verses that many of us have heard and the Prabhupada quotes many, many times. So I think this is a really great section of the Bhagavatam. I'm very, of course, eager to hear the next few weeks of classes. So here Suta is beginning to answer questions, but first he's actually addressing the questions themselves. As we know, the questions of the sages, there were six of them. And they were, what is the most beneficial for humanity? What is the most beneficial for humanity? What is the essence of all scriptures and most pleasing to the intellect? What is the purpose of Krishna's appearance? What are the, describe the pastimes of Krishna, describe the stories of the avatars, and where will we take or who will be the shelter of Dharma after Krishna's departure? So in the first chapter, these six questions were asked. Now we're going to start hearing the answers. And not only do we get the answers to these questions, but we will be getting almost a complete picture of the process of devotional service of bhakti. In the beginning of the second chapter, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that in this chapter 2, there are three items that are discussed. He says, first, the process or the abhideya, which is bhakti. Then the goal, prayojana, which is prema, and then the object of worship, the Supreme Lord Krishna. So it's a very complete picture of the stages of bhakti leading to the highest absolute truth. So this is what is coming up for us. But back to our questions today. Suta is praising these questions of the sages, and three reasons are listed here in the verse. First, because they pertain to Krishna. That's number one. Anything pertaining to Krishna, of course, is absolute, pure, and spiritual. So he's thanking them. Thank you for focusing on Krishna. And thus, they are for the world's welfare. And thirdly, he says they will give complete satisfaction to the self. Yayinatma supersedati. So Prabhupada spends a great deal of time in his purport in this next, the middle paragraph, talking about human beings asking questions and getting answers. And he elaborates on the many ways that people are constantly asking questions, not only human beings, but the animals, the birds, everyone. Even animal species do communicate a great deal. Now, usually they're talking about either food or danger. It's not very sophisticated, but they certainly are communicating. When Prabhupada was talking about the birds coming in the morning, coming back in the evening with all their questions, it reminded me in my house, when I sit on the porch and I've got a lot of trees around and I hear about 8 or 10 different bird calls, I'm hearing one bird, which is a mockingbird, making it 10 different calls. I actually have a little bit digression here, but my yard, my land, has basically become a mockingbird sanctuary. Not by design, but because they drive out all the other birds. They're actually very aggressive. Some of you probably seen them attacking cats and things. Yeah, all these mockingbirds are... You know, that famous book, To Kill a Mockingbird, the line from that is, who would kill a mockingbird? Such a sweet, innocent creature. That author had never, ever seen a mockingbird in her life, believe me. They're actually a gang, basically. They form this gang, and they communicate. Their questions and answers are like, gang signals, gang signs, I think. Because, they do. They communicate, they get together, they come together, and they'll drive out anything, and they'll protect each other, and, of course, figure out where the food is. And so anyway, this is what's going on in the animal kingdom. Questions and answers of a fairly low nature, which revolve around eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Now, a lot of human activity, Prabhupada is indicating, is of a similar nature. And thus, it's really a not very high level, but human beings may actually ask higher order questions. Human beings are capable of critical thinking, unlike the animal species, but much of their questions revolve around economics, making money, of love, relationships, etc. Sometimes they may ask about what is the purpose of life? What more is there? What should I be doing? What's it all about? And that is a specific quality unique to humans, that the human being can inquire about the nature of life. But we see that these questions are everywhere. It was kind of amusing, I thought, the way Prabhupada wrote this, but it's really true when you think about it. You go on every product website, what do they always have? FAQs, right? Frequently asked questions. Everywhere, because everyone has questions. So you see that everywhere. In the newspapers, there's always... By the way, for the younger people, what a newspaper is this big sheet of paper, and you open it up and you read things. It's kind of like if you took a website and you printed it out. That would be a newspaper. Anyway, I've actually been told that most young people do not read books, magazines, or newspapers anymore. It's true. But not that they don't read. They have other forms. But you see these columns. Dear Abby, Dr. Columns, Gainsborough Sun, it's a bunch of these, if anyone ever reads that paper. The pharmacist, there's a gardening column, there's an antique column on Saturdays, for those of you who are interested. And everyone's always writing questions or giving answers. So we've got this constant, and of course on Facebook, there's a barrage of questions and answers. Most of the answers, 90%, are completely wrong. They have no resemblance to reality, but yet they're there. People asking questions and answers. And the result is, Srila Prabhupada is saying, none of these inquiries or answers give satisfaction to the self. Why? Well, because they're not asking the right questions. What is the proper inquiry for the living entity? In even the Vedanta Sutra, from the very beginning, the very first aphorism is Atato Brahma Jivasa. Now that one is in a human form of life, is the time to inquire about the absolute truth. And in the next line, Janmadisha Yata, The Supreme is that whom everything emanates. So, Vyasadeva, the author of Vedanta Sutra, is saying, we should first inquire, what is the source of everything? Where did everything come from? That's the first question an intelligent person will ask. So, there's many different ways of knowledge, shruti, prachaksha, atiham, anuman, logic, direct experience, histories, shabda, of course, or shruti. And that's a whole other class. But there are all these different types of ways of gaining knowledge. And there's some really elaborate discussions, both in the 11th canto, which we just recently studied, especially some of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's purports and Jiva Goswami and his Sandarbhas. They show, and Prabhupada in many places in his purports, that these different processes of knowledges can help us to substantiate spiritual conclusions, but three of them are very limited. The only one that is not is Shruti or Shabda, spiritual sound vibration, because that goes beyond direct experience and gets us to the final causation. If we're asking where does everything come from, well, there are material causes. The immediate material cause, as I actually described, Jiva Goswami in the Paramatma Sandarbha says that the immediate material cause is called Pradana, but the remote or spiritual cause is called Nimitta, or Nimitta Matra. This is the remote or final cause, and that's what one is interested in. This is also described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Swayambhuva Manu speaks to Dhruva, 4.11.17, a verse that starts Nimitta Matram Tatrasin. He says, my dear Dhruva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is uncontaminated by the material modes of nature. He is the remote cause of the creation of this material cosmic manifestation. He gives the impetus, cause and effect, and the whole universe moves just as iron moves by the integrated force of a magnet. So this Nimitta Matram is the remote cause, and if we take this logic on further, and it says, well, if this is the remote cause, the cause of all causes, where does it finally come back to? Sarva Karana Karanam, Krishna, as the cause of all causes. So a spiritual inquiry leads us to Krishna. Now, the question might be, even if we accept that Krishna is the spiritual cause of everything, how does that necessarily give satisfaction to the self, which is the conclusion of this verse here? I think this was interesting. The line is yayatma supersedati. And the next verse, verse 6, the last line of that one is not yenatma, but yayatma supersedati, very similar, that giving satisfaction to the self. And I think the same line is there, one verse in the first chapter. So we see that a few times, this yenatma or yayatma supersedati, satisfaction of the self. So this is an important concept. We want to achieve spiritual satisfaction by knowing what will satisfy the self, and by that we have to know what is the goal and what is our real self-interest. In other words, the satisfaction of the self comes through knowing one's self-interest. Bhagavatam 5.6.19 says, those who unnecessarily engage in bodily conceptions and create an atmosphere of materialism are ignorant of their real self-interest. Out of his causeless mercy, Lord Vrishabhadeva taught the self's real identity and goal of life. So we have so many false identities due to our material conception of life. You know, we are thinking that this is what is important to us, this is what should be our interest, etc., etc., because we're not knowing the nature of the soul and the soul's desires and what will satisfy the soul. Srila Prabhupada in his purport says, satisfaction through self-realization is called Sarupananda. The conditioned soul, eternally sleeping in darkness, does not understand his self-interest. He tries to become happy by making material adjustment, but that is impossible. It is therefore said in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and this is another very important verse from 7.5.31, Nitevadu Svarta Gatim Hivishnum. Very familiar verse, Prabhupada uses many times. It says, due to gross ignorance, the conditioned soul does not know his real self-interest, and that is to take shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. So this word Svarta Gatim probably defines it as ultimate goal or real self-interest. He uses both of those. In fact, right in that particular verse, that's the way he defines Spartakatim. As ultimate goal of life or one's real self-interest. Same thing, really. So we need to understand the real interest of the soul. What is our real interest? Well, obviously, it's not the interest of the body. It's the interest of the soul. And why is the interest of the soul to serve Krishna? It's kind of an elaborate philosophical argument. One place that it's summarized that's kind of interesting, because you don't see this very often throughout the Bhagavatam, but this is in chapter 14, and towards the end of the prayers by Lord Brahma, Shukadeva explains why the mothers of the coward boys and calves loved Krishna more than their own sons. Why is it that that year when Krishna expanded himself and became the calves and the coward boys, the mothers of the cows, and the mothers of the coward boys felt more love than they ever had before for their children, because there was actually Krishna? So that was the question. King Pariket asks, "O Brahman, how could the coward women have developed for Krishna, someone else's son, such unprecedented pure love? Love they never felt for their own children. Please explain this." Shukadeva Goswami, so this is text 50 of chapter 14. Shukadeva Goswami said, "O King, for every created being, the dearmost thing is certainly his own self. The dearness of everything else, children, wealth, and so on, is due only to the dearness of the self." In other words, if one's own self wasn't dear to one, then how could others pertaining to them have importance? "For this reason, O best of kings, the embodied soul is self-centered. He is more attached to his own body and self than his so-called possessions like children, wealth, and home. Indeed, for persons who think the body is the self, those things have importance like only in relationship to the body, and they're never as dear as the body itself. If a person comes to the stage of considering the body mine instead of me, he will certainly not consider the body as dear as his own self. After all, the body grows old and useless, but one's desire to continue living remains strong. Therefore, it is the own self, the soul, that is most dear to every embodied living being, and is simply for the satisfaction of this self that the whole material creation of moving and non-moving entities exists. You should know that Krishna is the original soul of all living entities. For the benefit of the whole universe, he has, out of his causeless mercy, appeared as an ordinary human being. He's done this by the strength of his internal potency. Those in this world who understand Lord Krishna as he is sees all things, whether stationary or moving, as manifest forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such enlightened persons recognize no reality apart from the Supreme Lord Krishna. Therefore, Krishna becomes the dearmost object, the most important item." Vishnu Chakravarti explains this a little bit. His commentary on verse 55. And in the Krishna book, Prabhupada presents a similar argument also. "In bringing about the conclusion, the object more dear than the self will be shown. That object is Krishna. Krishna is the soul of the universe and the soul of all souls. Just as sons are dear out of consideration of one's own body, and just as the body is dear out of one's consideration of one's own soul, so the soul is dear out of consideration of the Paramatma. And Paramatma's perfection is Krishna. As Krishna is the most dear object for the gopis, he is more dear than their own sons." All right, that was kind of a long explanation, but I think it is a very interesting idea that how could anything be more dear to us than ourselves? But because actually we are coming from Krishna, it says the soul of all souls, therefore Krishna is actually the most dear object. And we cannot really be happy unless we are connected with that original source of ourselves and everything else, who is Krishna. Now, Srila Prabhupada, in his purport, gives us a pretty good indication, a little more practically or specifically, of how we can attain that true satisfaction. Prabhupada says, "Satisfaction of the soul can only be obtained by questions and answers on the subject of Krishna. Krishna is our most intimate master, friend, father, or son, and object of conjugal love. Forgetting Krishna, we created so many objects of questions and answers. but none of them are able to give us complete satisfaction. Now, Prabhupada, of course, has discussed this elaborately in many other places. Here he just kind of drops in one sentence, where he says, Krishna is our most intimate master, friend, lover. In other words, the five rasas. So Prabhupada is indicating, if we really want true satisfaction, if we want to be completely satisfied in the self, then we need to develop our relationship with Krishna. And of course, that relationship will ultimately be developed in one of those five ways. So the satisfaction of the soul is dependent upon relationship with Krishna. All relationships originate, of course, in Krishna's relationship. So in this material world, we see what we often call the perverted reflection of those. This is from a purport to Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adilila 156. Prabhupada says, one should understand the Supreme Lord exists everywhere and his transcendental spiritual nature, and that the living entity's relationship with the Lord are directly and indirectly existing everywhere, even in this material world. In the spiritual world, there are five kinds of relationships with the Supreme Lord, Shanta, Dasya, Shakya, Vatsala, and Madhurya. The perverted reflection of these rasas are found in the material world. So, and then Prabhupada goes on in that purport to explain how in this material world we see all those different rasas. And he says, actually, people's attachment to their property and land and all that, he says that's like Shanta rasa, you know, the, I don't want to say impersonal, when I'm trying neutral, the neutral rasa. And of course, in servitude, there's all sorts of relationships of people, one person serving another. Actually, we all are serving one another. Somebody works for a boss, or somebody is. And then, of course, we certainly see friendship. We see Sakya rasa. We all experience that. Vatsala rasa, obviously. In fact, Prabhupada said that the relationship, the loving relationship between the mother and the child, is probably the strongest loving relationship, and it is the closest reflection of spiritual relationships because it's the most selfless. You know. And then, of course, Madhurya rasa. That's what kind of makes the whole world go around, isn't it? Everybody's here because of relationships, and ultimately we know that material desire is the cause of everything that continues in this material world. And, of course, love and sex and relationships are just, they flood the consciousness of everywhere, in media, in everything, in people's discussions. So these relationships and rasas, we all understand them, we all experience them, but they are not experienced in their purity. They're not experienced in the reality of our original relationship with Krishna. The rasa, or relationship with Krishna, is the pure form of these relationships. Because it is, Prabhupada said, without inebriety. In other words, there is no self-centeredness, there is no motivation, but the relationships just exist to have loving exchanges. And they become very, very mutual. Very mutual relationships, where not only is the living entity trying very much to love Krishna, but Krishna is reciprocating that love with the living entity, or with all living entities. And of course, we have in this month of Damodar, it's just such a beautiful example. I mean, I think we all love the story very, very much, where Mother Yashoda is trying to bind Krishna after he's broken the pot, stolen the butter. And of course, she keeps trying to tie him, and the rope is always 2 inches too short. And she tries over and over again, and finally she's getting so exhausted that then Krishna, out of his love and reciprocation, he allows the ropes to tie him, which of course symbolizes, it's not really symbolism, it's just right there in reality, that Krishna is bound by the love of his devotee. Krishna actually feels obligated because the love of his devotee is so great that he has to reciprocate that love. So we have this wonderful story that we celebrate all month. and gives us an example to understand and meditate upon that loving relationship with Krishna. So it is our primary purpose to reestablish that loving relationship with Krishna, and all of our questions and answers should be based around that as much as possible. How can we understand Krishna? How can we better serve Krishna? How can we better hear and chant about Krishna? But of course, in that devotional service, we'll transfer our attachment from material to spiritual. And as that happens, our spiritual relationship develops, and that brings complete satisfaction to the self. That is where the satisfaction of self will happen, to the degree that we redevelop our relationship of love and service to Krishna. Now, of course, we also understand that Krishna is never alone. It's not that Krishna is there in some vacuum and, you know, then we come into that and somehow, no. Krishna is there with his cowherd boys and cowherd girls and parents and trees and parrots and cows and everything. So Krishna is always with his devotees. Prabhupada would say, you never see Krishna alone, always with his devotees. So it's not that, sometimes, you know, I don't know, somehow I think we had these conceptions when we were very young and began Krishna consciousness. Well, they may all be there, but they're just kind of all there having their relationship, and like you never talk to them or anything. You know, everybody else is here in the spiritual world. No, there's relationship everywhere, and there's relationship between devotees. You know, I always think of, you know, how we can understand that is, well, think about Chaitanya Leela, right? All the characters in Chaitanya Leela all came from the spiritual world, right? And they all have a spiritual relationship, an eternal relationship with Krishna. They're there in Goloka Vrindavan. And what is their relationships to one another that we read in Chaitanya Charitamrita or Chaitanya Bhagavat, right? They're like embracing and crying and loving one another, right? And I mean, it's like very, you know, deep emotional relationships, you know, between all Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates. So loving relationships are there amongst the devotees. And that's very natural. And because sometimes it's difficult for us to immediately see Krishna or relate to Krishna, you know. We're not so purified that we have the eyes to see Krishna. But we can see, relate, and serve and love Krishna's devotees. That's very easy. And Prabhupada has created this international society of devotees, of Krishna consciousness, where we can come together for the purpose of developing spiritual life. So our spiritual relationships are often with the devotees, and of course, primary relationship is with the spiritual master. Spiritual master is absolutely essential and critical. And Srila Prabhupada came and gave us a person that we could know, that we could see, that we could relate to, that we could love, that we could serve. You know, and yesterday, although, you know, as the wife we say, bittersweet, Prabhupada's disappearance, it's still always a very, very beautiful day for me just to hear all of the pastimes, the remembrances, and the glorification, how Srila Prabhupada touched everyone's life. And this is the power of the devotee, the power of relationships with devotees. So all devotee relationships are important. Of course, Srila Prabhupada, of course, our guru, but also our God brothers, God sisters, and all the other devotees. We experience spiritual safety, the sadhu sangha, in the relationship with devotees. It is the place where we are protected, it is the place where we are safe, and it's the place where we're happy. We become satisfied. Who doesn't feel satisfaction of the self at a wonderful festival, a wonderful feast, a wonderful kirtan, being with the devotees? It's there, we experience it. So that is satisfaction of self, the atmana supersedati. It comes through connection with Krishna. Because the devotees are devotees of Krishna, they are connected with Krishna, and we feel that connection. And it's that connection, as the sages are saying here, because Krishna is involved, it gives the highest welfare to the whole world and gives us all complete satisfaction. Thank you very much. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. Are there any comments, questions, thoughts? Okay, let's turn back.
I've been dying to share this with the devotees about the song, you know, Mick Jagger, Rolling Stones, I Can't Get No Satisfaction. And that's what you were talking about. And a senior devotee shared with us that he was in Jamaica, and there sat Mick Jagger. And he went over to him, he's a devotee, had a book, and Mick Jagger, poor lost soul that he is, looked at him and pointed his finger right in his face and said, "You are nothing, and I am nothing," and walked away.
Okay.
I have a question. You know, all devotees are special, but sometimes we see where devotees, for one reason or another, have, you know, they can't come to the temple, you know, some difficulty occurred, you know, but they're still devotees, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So my question is, you know, how to deal, what do you mean, is there anything, I know that in the Amish community there's a system that they call shunning. But you know, they'll give service. Let's say the people, they need to have some shed built, so they'll all go and help them build the shed, but they won't accept service from them. So that's kind of one way they do it. I'm just wondering, you know, what's the best way to deal with that kind of situation? Because
I didn't quite understand them. Who doesn't accept
the Amish? That's how they deal with someone who's been, you know, excommunicated in such a way.
Okay.
They give service, they help, but they don't accept the service.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, in our community, you know, our organization, in your opinion, what is the best way to deal with that? Like, you know, I have some devotees who are in that situation. I'll bring them prasadam, and I'm still, you know,
your devotees that are shunned or excommunicated?
Yeah, from our community, yeah.
That's very, very small number that I know.
It may be a small amount, but I mean, in the bigger picture, it happens. So I'm just wondering, in your opinion, what is the best way
I haven't seen that happen as much as it's more self-selection. That people choose not to come, or they...
Uh-huh.
I see much more people estrange themselves, devotees estrange themselves from the temple or the community of devotees in the temple like that, and they choose to... Now, that doesn't mean they can't perform devotional service. They can perform devotional service anywhere.
Right.
And even if somebody is not allowed to come... For instance, of course, I obviously was in the Child Protection Office. There were some devotees there who were found that they had committed activities or behavior that was of sufficient severity that they shouldn't be allowed to come to the temple.
Right.
So there are some cases like that, yes. Okay, how do you deal with them? Well, I mean, if it's some of your relationship with, you can befriend them, you can try to encourage them, hearing chanting. Generally, those cases, the ones that I know of, are really for the protection of the devotees and the devotee community. Now, that doesn't mean that the person can't continue to make spiritual advancement, and they may even rectify, atone, whatever. It may happen. You know, but...
I mean, there's other cases of people, maybe they're in a different sangha, you know what I mean? Those kinds of cases. Anyway, maybe it's an easy answer that it's just a personal thing, that if you...
I guess maybe the broader question is not specifically what any particular politics might be involved in anyone's situation, but in other words, devotees who are not in such good standing for whatever reason, and how do we relate to them? And of course, we want to have good association. Part of the idea of Sadhu Sangha is to get good association, so we should always seek out that association which is enlivening to us, which helps us to become more Krishna conscious, right, and inspires us. On the other hand, a devotee who has a certain maturity and strength and seniority, as most of you do, can also give your association to others. So it works that way too. A person who is in not such a good situation, maybe they're, you know, not following principles, whatever, they're having difficulty in their spiritual life, you can always give them your association to help them. That's the mercy of the devotee. And that's what's described as the position of the second-class devotee, right? The Majjhimadhikari. You know, the Majjhimadhikari, you know, it serves Krishna, gives all respect to those who are senior, makes friendships, you know, with their peers, with the devotees on equal level, and to those who are newer people or who are not as advanced, does what? Gives them mercy, right? So in other words, there's no situation where we just, well, no, there is. With demons, we ignore. That's true. That's the other class. So with the demoniac, we stay away from them.
But if we're talking...
Give prasad.
Yeah, well, you can always give prasad. Yeah. And in fact, Prabhupada even said that we will, you know, like, preaching to the faithless and, like, you know, as an offense. Prabhupada said sometimes we will even, the devotee will risk that offense, you know, and approach the faithless person to try to help them. Yeah. So, yeah, we try to give our mercy to everyone. That's the position of the devotee. Yeah, anyone else?
Relation to Mother Sukadeva's quest, I know a lot, some devotees, I'm relating also, they're very advanced. Like, they preaching from outside, there are articles, but they don't like to come to the program. They said some inhibition relating with the devotees also. So I find a little difficulty myself to, yes, I do respect them a lot because they're more advanced than I can believe, either by initiation or whatever, mm-hmm. But it's not that blissful thing. You can build up a lot of relationship there because they're all critical from the devotees, yeah, who are gathering in the morning program. Mm-hmm.
So one thing we can do, if devotees have certain difficulties or they're critical or whatever, but yet, you know, they've maybe done a lot of service, is we can respect, give respect from a distance, but not necessarily associate, right? In other words, some devotees, it may not be good to take the association, but we can offer respect that they are a devotee and they've done service. You know, it's just requires a little, I don't know, common sense and, you know, how to properly balance things. Okay.
This concept, this pastime where the gopis love Krishna with the pastime with Lord Brahma more than their son. Sometimes we see that manifestation where, you know, you might appreciate a child because they have good behavior. Is that kind of a reflection more of spiritual quality or selfishness? Or
you appreciate the child because they're what?
Their qualities. They have very nice qualities or something. And
often, yeah, those are often reflections of spiritual qualities. I mean, particularly with devotees, sometimes you see that. Sometimes in certain devotees, you just see these really nice spiritual qualities come. There's also sometimes we're attracted to material qualities, right? Someone who may be very beautiful or whatever it might be, or very intelligent or whatever. Which is, when those things are combined with one's spiritual nature, then, of course, they're glorious, they're beautiful.
But sometimes when we see somebody who is, you know, I don't know, they take care of themselves, I don't know, more so, and we tend to think they're selfish. But in one sense, that is Krishna in the heart. But it seemed like a small definition between taking care of the body and loving Krishna, because he's the super soul of all souls. Mm-hmm. So is it a fine definition to understand if you're selfish and taking care of yourself, that because you love Krishna?
That is interesting, because I was talking about self-interest. There's also material self-interest, material self-absorption, self-interest. In other words, we have a word, we call them selfish, right? In other words, someone who is overly concerned only with their own needs and not others. That's material, right? What we're talking about is a spiritual, the idea of one's spiritual self-interest, which means complete devotion to Krishna and obviously, you know, service to everyone. Yeah, that's our highest self-interest, is actually to serve everyone, to serve the devotees, to serve Krishna. That is our self-interest. But yet, often, that can be, we don't see that very often, very purely, often we see self-interest, you know, with those material elements that you're indicating. Yeah. Okay, one more maybe? Madame Mahan. Once again, you get the last word.
I was thinking that when you were reading about how the most dear, was that in the third nutshell verse from the Bhagavatam? Where is it or isn't it? You know, like Krishna says, I enter into everything, at the same time I don't enter into anything. And then it reminded me of the 1.2.21, which I guess we'll get to in a week or two, where it says the fruit of activities is terminated when one sees the self as the master. And then it's kind of wondering, is it a small s or a big s? Because sometimes they say that the small s is the self, but the big s is Krishna. So, what's it? Bahusham, that the one had become many. Why did Krishna, originally it says it was just Krishna, and then he expands himself. So, the living entities are expansions of Krishna from his pleasure potency for him to enjoy. So, in one sense, we are simultaneously, inconceivably
one
and different. Yeah. So when you were making that point from, what's it, 10, 14, 15, 55, how, why it's...
That's kind of how we're one, right?
Yeah, because we're part and part, a chip off the old block, you know, because we are in one sense Krishna. We don't, where else does our existence come from?
Right.
So the, to that's the expansion. Is it a byproduct? Is it, you know, philosophically, they take this point quite extremely. That's why the Chintabheda Veda Tattva has all the four sampradayas. Because are you Krishna or are you not Krishna? Yes, yeah.
And that's another class. Okay, thank you all very much. I'll go as Jiva Prabhupada.